With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Beth Maitland.
And this is Joel Brook.
And we're on Brandon's Buzz.
We're buzzing with Brandon.
We are. We're buzzing with Brandon. So tune in.
Hi, everybody. This is Nicholas Walker, and you're listening to Brandon Buzz on Blog Talk Radio. This is a great show. Brandon is a great host.
So if you feel that you just can't take it and your world isn't what it seems, don't forget that life can be what you make it, baby, when you live on a street of dreams.
Hey, this is Nia Peoples, and you're with Brandon's Buzz, the place to be.
This is Terry Garber, and you are buzzing with Brandon.
This is Maya Bialik, and you are lucky enough to be listening to Brandon's Buzz.
Hey, guys, and welcome back to Brandon's Buzz. It is 10 a.m. here in Texas. It's 11 a.m. Back east, and it's 8 a.m. out in sunny California, and I am thrilled to be back on Brandon's Buzz. I've been on a little hiatus. As you probably know, if you've been listening to the show regularly, my partner and I just bought a house, so I spent the last 3 weeks living in a maze of boxes and new furniture and all kinds of madness, and I just haven't had time to work on my blog very much or host this show. And next week I'm going on a road trip to Colorado, so I won't be on the air for a couple more weeks after this, but I'll be back in the back half of August with all new shows and great guests, and I appreciate you stopping by here today, and I appreciate my guest who is also coming in from her vacation to come gab with me for a bit and you know, talk about all the soaps and talk about all the exciting stuff. It's really great fun. You know, when I fell in mad love with her legendary soap opera weekly column, Critical Condition, 20 years ago, I couldn't have dared to dream that I would one day not only have conversations with her, but be able to genuinely call her my friend. She rested her Marlena Delacroix moniker for a time earlier this decade, but she's come back just when we needed her most. And her first appearance on this show a couple months ago was such a smashing success that I just had to have her back. And she's here today just bursting with opinions about this very busy, very action-packed soap summer. It's a great thrill to welcome back to my show today the funny, the supremely astute, Connie Passalacqua-Heyman.
Hi, Brandon. I'm just so pleased to be back. I had such a wonderful time with you the last time, and I have to thank you for all that wonderful gush. I'm just blushing, really. I don't know if you could see my little cartoon character blushing, but I'm blushing. And it's very much appreciated.
You know how much I love you, and I had such a great time with you the first time, too, and I hope you're a regular here at Brandon's Buzz, because you were just thrilled.
Delighted, especially now. You know, I haven't really written a really long column this summer, and I'm just, even though I thought I was on vacation, I'm never on vacation. I always have those damn shows on, no matter what I'm doing, but, you know, I'm just astounded by what I see this
summer.
Isn't
it funny, though, how it's impossible to walk away, even when they're so bad? I mean, you know,
my old favorite
One Life to Live, I've watched it for 21 years now, and, you know, I've lived through the best of times and the worst of times, and I haven't walked away.
Oh, me too. You know, I've watched it for 40 years, and even when I was in graduate school, that was the only show I watched, and that was when Dena Higley was writing
it, so you have to see
how desperate I was.
So, you know, we'll get there in a bit. Let's talk about another ABC show that's fallen on hard times, All My Children, you know.
Oh, God.
it's fallen into such a state of disrepair, and it's almost as though the people running it don't realize how bad it is. Or don't care.
It's All My Children was always my favorite going back. And it's just, you know, we thought we had seen it devastated under Megan, but Megan loved the show. You know, she loved the characters, she loved the actors. This, you know, Mr. Pratt, who I have to say I've never met, you know, he thinks he's writing like The End of Search for Tomorrow or Love of Life. He's not writing All My Children, and it's scary. It's like watching it from outer space now. It really is. And, I just think it's real. I think it's very, very scary, and I just don't know how much longer they can go on with him.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Are they happy with the job he's doing, and how much longer are they going to stick with?
Well, the ratings are terrible, so I don't know what kind of arrangement he has with I don't know what his contract is, but I feel sorry for the actors. I was going to write a column that, you know, these actors have got like the best male cast in daytime. You know, mm-hmm. Vincent Irizarry, Michael Knight, David Canary, Ricky Paul, Torsten, okay, and of course Darnell, right?
Sure.
And these poor guys, I watch them on the screen, and it's like they're obviously at a loss. You know, they don't really have anything to act, and they all have to act as fast as they can because there's nothing there, and it's scary because you know these guys are the best. You know, and you just watch the show, and you just almost see them sweating. That's how bad the material is, and I feel bad for them because they are really great actors. You know, and a lot of them have devoted their lives to soap opera. You know, look at Torsten. I mean, mm-hmm. He's so wonderful. And, you know, and I think to me that's what sticks out the most is that the cast is just like, you know, if we think it's bad, you can imagine what they have to, you know, they've got to make it come to life, and it's scary.
You know, poor Michael Knight, I feel the worst for him because they're writing Tad as such a buffoon now. It's, you know, I mean, he can play anything, and he has played everything over the years.
Right, right. Well, you know, I call him the Borscht-Belt comedian, you know. Because he is. I don't know if you ever saw a movie called Broadway Danny Rose with Woody Allen, and he's like an agent to all these like two-bit acts on Broadway, and they have like plate spinners and bad comedians, and that's what they've made of Tad, and it's horrible. And the thing is, you know, I think I know why they did it, because, you know, many zillions of years ago, when Michael Knight was first on All My Children, he went to Hollywood and he did a movie, and everybody thought he was going to be this next big comic actor like Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't happen, you know. I mean, it doesn't happen for a lot of people. And they probably said to him, well, let's see what he's good at. Let's give him some comedy. But the stuff they're writing is not funny. It's not funny, and it's horrible, you know. And Tad's wit was always like an Agnes wit, you know,
mm-hmm.
not a Borscht-Belt comedian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what a botch job. I mean, really, and I'm sure he knows it too. He must.
You know, back in the glory days, Tad was kind of the ultimate truth teller in a way. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he couched it in humor and in, you know, kind of...
Yeah, because he's very vulnerable. He's left
yeah.
in the park. His parents left him in the park when he was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
And but now, I just, you know, I really don't know. I when he comes on, I hardly even see him, and I don't think that's what they're intending, you know.
Exactly. You know, I had the infamous Michael Bruno on my show a couple months ago, and
uh-huh.
he told me that he judged the drama series Emmy Reels and that he thought AMC was a shoe-in.
Are any of his clients on it?
Beth Ehlers is, and Ricky Paul is.
Oh, okay. Just curious. Yes, go on.
But,
uh-huh.
I mean, you know, he went on to explain himself, talking about the episodes that everybody submitted and that he thought they were head and shoulders above everybody. It was the only one that gave him a true emotional reaction. And if that indeed comes to pass and they win the best series Emmy, what does that mean for the creative
team? They're not going to win. General Hospital will win before they do. You know, I think the vibes are out on that show. They are not going to win. I mean, they even had hard times winning, you know, when it was great.
Yeah.
So I cannot see them. And in terms of, you know, the actors giving emotional truth, there's nothing there to act. What is the truth? Uh-huh. So I respectfully disagree with him. I didn't see any of the reels. I don't judge. I am just a critic.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I am just a critic, and I've always been a critic, and that's it.
The ridiculous thing about the system is now that anybody can pick a good episode. I mean, you know, out of 260 episodes that each show does, or whatever the number is, every show is capable of coming up with one good episode. I mean, it's just...
You're right, like CGI or something.
Exactly.
You know? But they've
exactly.
They've been playing the system from the beginning. You know, they've been playing, you know, I remember 20 years ago, that was, you know, when they first brought this in, that was a complaint. You know, but, you know, to be very honest, I think I talked about this the last time I was on the show. I'm just like not, you know, the Emmys don't really mean very much to me now
yeah.
because I think we have bigger problems.
It sure doesn't have the same prestige and the same cachet that it used to. I mean, you know, at one time it actually was what it was intended to be, which was the highest honor that could be bestowed.
Well, I think it is. I think it still is. It's just, I don't know. I mean, it's like a bad time. And also, you know, the Emmys this year, as you know, are not being done by the networks. They're being done by the CW, and no one knows what to expect.
Yeah.
You know, so I think we're going to be surprised, and I don't know what that surprise is going to be. But, it, you know, it's always been easy to play the system, always. Okay.
But it's just so politically motivated and politically driven now that it's really hard to take it seriously, and even as a fan, to put any faith in it. I mean,
Well, as you know, that's why I used to do the Marlena Awards, because, you know, the Emmys have always been politically motivated. Now I think it's a little bit more because everybody wants to keep their jobs, you know.
Yeah.
But I used to use this line that everybody says it's great, you know, when someone wins. When somebody loses, they say, well, you know, we should have a different system. You know, it's always been like a very difficult thing to do daytime Emmys in the first place. But as a fan, you know, I say think independently. It's true. You know, I haven't even thought. I have never even sat down this year and thought, well, who was the best and who wasn't? You know, I'm just so busy watching this craziness on my screen,
uh-huh.
You know, fight for survival, that to me awards are irrelevant.
And, you know, I'm one of those people who lived every March for the Marlena Awards. I loved every year.
Thank you.
Who you would come up with and what categories you would come up with, and you always came up with something different, and it was great.
Oh, thank you. They were very selfish. The whole thing was everybody, you know, I think I did them on the theory that everybody has their own awards. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Everyone, and those just happen to be mine. You know, and I think that everybody does have their own awards.
So there's a growing sense that Stewart is alive and that Adam is dead.
I told you.
Yeah,
you were
the first one to posit that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you still believe it if it's just that David Canary is so desperate for something to play that he's tossing that in just as an aside.
Well, you know, when it all happened, I thought it was kind of curious, you know, because, you know, I had interviewed him and for the American Archives of TV, and he loves Stewart, you know, and Stewart and Adam are like part of the whole, you know, the two of them together equals one. So I don't know, I thought that was very suspicious. But then, you know, as events went by, you know, especially when they got him together with Annie, and I just wrote this in my column, I mean, Stewart and Annie are the same kind of people. They both have mental problems, and they've both been, you know, in hospitals. And, you know, I don't think one understands the other. They're like a perfect match. So when I saw that Adam was putting Adam with Annie, I said, this is very curious. And I think that's my theory. You know, that's my theory, that he is alive and he loves Annie. Although I don't know why anybody would at this point. You know, I don't quite understand what they're going to do. They have been very secretive. And I know I wasn't the only one who thought it was Stewart. There were other people think so, too. But that's how I reasoned it out.
Well, you know, the whole story has been just impossibly complicated and almost Byzantine with its you know, different characters lying and every day there's some kind of ridiculous twist. I mean, it's just been really hard to follow.
Because the man is not Henry Slessor, who used to write Edge of Night. Okay, Edge of Night was the best mystery show ever, and
uh-huh.
he knew how to do twists and how to plant evidence. And obviously, Mr. Pratt doesn't really know. And, you know, I don't know anybody who's watched it all the way through. I mean, I'll be honest, I've tuned it out for a bit because it's just, and also, as I said, I just can't stand to watch those poor actors sweat so much. You know, David Canary is like sweating a ton every single day. What am I doing with this crazy story? And I don't know who could follow it. Could you?
No, huh? I tune in maybe once a week just to.
Uh-huh.
Just to kind of
I don't really even
happening.
Think anybody cares at this point. You know, Stewart and Adam were not really meant to be sympathetic characters. You know, they were meant to be antagonists, people who push the action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to feel for them. So I'm very confused. Very confused indeed. But again, I admire David Canary enormously, and all the actors and actresses on that show.
Every one of them, Torsten and Ricky Paul and poor Beth Ehlers, who was just drowning.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I saw her the other day. I hadn't seen her for a long time. And it's like, where's my character, you know? I know, I feel terrible. You know, when you go out in front of millions of people and you don't have a character, you know, it must be horrendous. It really must be. I mean, I still love her. You know, we all
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, even though things got tough for her on Guiding Light in the past, in the last couple of years of her tenure there, I mean, she left a very cushy job for, you know, promises of gold and, you know, everything at the end of the rainbow, and it hasn't panned out at all.
Yeah, that I'm sure that happens to a lot of people, especially, you know, I think all the usual, you know, things about soaps are gone, like, My Children is a great job. No, it's not anymore. You know, and All My Children used to be the greatest show in soaps. It used to be the greatest job in soaps. If you had Agnes writing for you and that
sure
great production team, and, you know, you were very lucky if you got on that show. Now I'd be afraid to be on that show.
What show would you not be afraid to be on?
None. None. I don't know. Maybe Young and Restless. It depends. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's about probably the only secure show at the moment. Everything else is kind of teetering. So, but Young and Restless is, as you know, we've all, you know, Young and Restless is flourishing. So, hooray. So at least something is.
Sure. You know, you mentioned Henry Slessor. Is he still alive? Do we know?
No, he died about...
Okay.
8 to 10 years ago. I knew him, though. I interviewed him at his palatial 72nd Street apartment, and he was a very interesting gentleman. He was very, very professional and, as I said, a real pro.
You invoked his name a lot in your column, and I would love to have a conversation with him. I didn't know if he was still alive or not.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, he died, I don't know, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago. I'm not sure. But,
okay,
you know, he had a great career. Great, you know, he was a writer for Perry Mason. He was a nighttime writer.
Absolutely.
And as I said, he was just very dignified and, you know, a gentleman of the old school. So, and
he brought something different and very exciting to this genre.
That's right. That's right. And I used to watch another show he wrote called Somerset when I was in high school. And, you know, he would do, which was not a great show except for the fact that, you know, Ted Danson and Jo Beth Williams, you know, came from that show. And
uh-huh,
he wrote that show for a while. And he had some pretty interesting mysteries on that show, too.
So back to All My Children, they're teaming up Cameron and Susan. Is that a good idea? Is that,
you know, I've been asked that a lot of times, and I've been thinking about it, and I was looking at Susan.
I mean, you're the leading luciologist in
I am on
the planet.
Well, you know, if a 30, I don't know how old is he, 35 or 40, is going to go after an older woman, let it be Susan. I mean, she's still gorgeous, you know, and he's gorgeous, so let them do what they do, you know. I haven't really seen the chemistry very much, and Susan usually has chemistry with just about everyone, but I think it's very awkward because it's not written very well. And, you know, I don't know if you realize this, but it seems that when Susan was going to get the storyline, I might just be imagining it, but she had a little nips and tucks, you know, and a little breastwork, and she looks gorgeous. You know, there are only a few women on daytime who can get work done, and it makes them look, you know, natural and gorgeous, like Deirdre Hall. Susan is one of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that, and I don't want to disparage anybody, but I was watching Bold and the Beautiful yesterday for the first time in eons, and
uh-huh,
I got a look at Hunter Tyler's face, and it is.
Oh, it's terrible. I know. It's a tragedy for a lot of people who have had it. You know, it must be so hard to keep a job in Hollywood, because I think like everyone has had work. Yesterday I was watching the shows, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, people my age have had work, you know. But, you know, people have varying
mm-hmm,
degrees of success with it. And Susan
mm-hmm
just looks great. But, you know, there are plenty of people that we could say that look really bad. And it's scary.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. But they have to do it, you know. They have to stay young, you know. They have to, you know, there's always a younger person coming up behind them. And, you know, I think it must be very difficult. So I salute the people that get it done right or have the money to get it done right.
So, you know, we were talking about our old favorite One Life to Live. You've been very out front about what you perceive to be rampant sexism on that show. And I'm wondering if you can explain that a little bit.
Well, first of all, I love the show, and I watch it every day, okay? And I've watched it every day for years, and I think that, you know, it's one of the two watchable shows now. Young
oh, it's eminently
online
watchable. I mean,
and, you know, I come in here, you know, every night after dinner I come in here and I watch it, so I'm a fan. I think that, you know, it's really well done, but I think that, you know, I think the way that it's written, if they just had a script editor, they might catch some things that are kind of insulting to women, you know, like, as I wrote many times, Marty sleeping with Todd again. You know, how many people sleep with their rapist? Okay, so that was just one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of the other ones you probably know. I mean, what do you think of Todd and Taya being back together again?
You know, I think it's ridiculous that they're trying to kind of refashion him as the romantic hero of the show.
Exactly, exactly. It's
ridiculous. It's ludicrous. And it's vaguely insulting to especially the long-term viewers of that show who have tracked his evolution.
It's more than that to the women, because why would you sleep with a guy that hit you in the face?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, that doesn't make any sense unless you're like Rihanna. And Taya is a very smart person. You know, she's really a bright person. They never showed you, is it something in their childhood that she's doing this? It's never been explained, so it doesn't play right. You know, I hate it, but if they're going to play it, and, you know, Doug Marlin could do a story like this, he would go back and explain it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Whereas they just kind of gloss over it, and it's really offensive. And you know, whenever
even the first time when it was her with Roger, they'd never really explained it. I mean, Claire LeBine just kind of put them together.
Well, I don't know. I think there was a lot of pressure at the time because Roger was such a big star. No one would, you know, it was not planned to be that way, and he just skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at that point, he had not hit her, and I think that when somebody hits you, you know, you should get the message. And that's what, and you know, it's like if somebody rapes you, you should get the message. And it's really anti-feminist, and it's really anti-female, and that's what makes me mad, because women are watching the show. And you're a guy, you see the same thing. So, you know, how does this get through?
You know, I sometimes just think that the creative people, the executives are under such pressure to, you know, put together a show and you know, just get it on the air, no matter good, bad, whatever, just to get it, a physical product on the air, that they're not really thinking that deeply in terms of what they're putting together. I mean,
well,
you
that's
know,
not a good enough excuse. That's their job, is to put the best thing they can on the air. You know, it's also been put you know, on Fast for the last 40 years, and you didn't see things like this until the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, that's not an excuse that we're writing Fast. You know, I'm sure that when, you know, we viewers always think we're the first ones to notice, but I'm sure if you're the actress who plays Taya or you're the director, you say, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there was an interview, was it last week, with, I was really surprised, with Farrah Fath? You know, when she was saying, well, this storyline is ridiculous. You know, you don't hear that very much. I salute her for speaking out, you know. But you don't hear that very much at all from anyone. And that storyline is ridiculous. And everybody
it is absolutely
knows it.
Ridiculous. Did you happen to catch the pregnancy reveal earlier in the week?
It went on forever. Didn't it take one whole episode?
I
couldn't stand it. It's ridiculous.
And it was just completely over the top and ridiculous. The acting was just totally unrestrained and over the top.
It's a ridiculous situation, and the person who is supposed to be the hero, you know, Rex is a wonderful, wonderful hero and a great strength to that show, and they've made a total ass of him. Seriously, I mean, there's something really wrong going on there, and it bears more investigating, but not from us fans. We can't do anything, you know, except to say, well, what is going on here? You know, and I just see it, and I go, you know, it's just like, how could this be on my set? You know, and you know, I think I wrote about the cat fights, and, you know, there was a cat fight, and they were both wearing, like, plunging necklines. I mean, why don't we just have, like, WWF? That's what I mean. It's offensive. Do you see? And I'm sure, you know, everybody must know it who works there, but, you know, it just bothers me. You know, I've like you, that's your show. You've done it for how long? How many years?
I started in 88, so 21 years.
All right, I started in 71, so,
wow.
You know, that's my show, too, and it's very hurtful.
You know, I tell you what drives me crazy is when you see a character like Blair, who has made such a trackable evolution over the years. I mean, she has matured in front of our eyes.
Uh-huh.
And in the past couple of years, she's just regressed to this ridiculous kind of foil for Todd. I mean, it's really kind of heartbreaking in a way to watch her just regress to something that we thought that she had matured out of.
Right. You know, you mentioned that the pace is really, you know, it's really, the pace is very fast on soaps. I think that, you know, they have to come up with these plots where there's something big happens every other day, right? So there's a crime or a rape or this or that. And I think what happens is that the women are the victims. And I think that since there are so many crimes and so many things, the women are the ones who regress. You know, I think that it's the pace of the storytelling takes a real toll on women. And you and I have watched Blair forever, and we know what she's like. And when we see her act like an idiot, we know something's wrong.
Yes, yes.
So they have to make the choice. You know, they have, do we have a fast pace and, you know, something's put on, you know, every other day for mini sweeps, or, you know, or do we have her be a real person? And I think that at this point, most people are saying, well, we've got to survive. We've got to step up that story, right? It's just my theory.
Well, and two, I'm sure it's true of all the soaps, but I know One Life to Live in particular, the way they film their show now, I mean, they film completely out of order. They film,
oh, they do? Uh-huh.
You know, bits and pieces of like six different episodes because they film by set and by character now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really difficult, I would imagine, to, you know, get any kind of continuity going when you're filming, you know, a bit of Monday's episode and then a bit of Friday's episode and then a bit of an episode 2 weeks from now, and it's almost impossible to keep track of anything like that, I would imagine.
Well, that's the producer's job, and that's why they have producer's assistants, okay? That, you know, again, this has been done on other soaps. It's the producer's job. I don't think it's the piecemeal part of filming. I think that, you know, maybe it's not being produced well. I don't know. Frank Valentini is supposed to be a great producer, so I really don't know. But I think the problems come more from the form, you know, from the fact that they've got to do everything immediately, and we've got to, you know, have a crash every other day. But they've done good stuff. I mean, they introduced this new black family, right, the Evans, and I love Destiny. I know a lot of people are very she's very controversial. Do you like her?
You know what? I do like her. I think she's cute, and I think she's refreshing, and she and Matthew together are
adorable.
That's a good budding couple.
Yeah, it's original. You know,
yeah.
You don't get to see a lot of originality.
Absolutely.
And you know, they have the two brothers who are at each other's throats, Greg and what's the
Sean?
Sean, yes. Greg and Sean, and I know they're casting a mother, so, you know, you have to compliment them on the fact that they're, you know, finally replenishing their black cast, and it looks like a very appealing family.
Yes.
You know, I'm optimistic about it.
I just wonder why they couldn't bring back the Gannons if they were going to, you know, bring in a...
Oh, I know. I love RJ. I love him. All older women love RJ. I'm not old, but I have a lot of, you know, he's such a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe they'll bring him back once in a while. You know, you never know with that show. Maybe he's related to them. You never know.
It's, hey, you know, anything's possible.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
How do you like the new Rachel?
I like her.
I do, too.
She's beautiful, and I don't think she's like the greatest actress in the world, but I think that she has a lot of strength. You know, she's played the role very strongly, and I like that, and I'm glad she's Nora's daughter, and that's great. She really feels like Nora's daughter, doesn't
mm-hmm.
she?
Yeah, she does, and she and Hillary have connected really well, it seems.
Yeah, definitely.
I was dubious at first because, you know, the original Rachel was so terrific that you know, it's hard to imagine anybody else in that role, but she's doing a very good job, I think.
No, I think she's a real I think she's definitely you know, one of the better castings of the year everywhere in soaps, definitely. And again, she's refreshing too, so you don't get to say that about many characters on soaps these days. So, you know, they've got a lot going for them.
So, are they really going to bring Bo and Nora back together again, or are they just yanking our chains yet again?
I've been thinking about this since because as you know, I did the first interview with them in 1992. And
yes, and if I'm not mistaken, you also did the first interview with Linda Gottlieb where she revealed that she was going to bring them together. Is that not true?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. At the time, it was like people didn't think that, you know, why didn't we do this before? And it was a great idea, and obviously it was a fantastic idea, and it worked like a charm. And, you know, why they didn't keep them together is everybody's... Everybody has theories, you know, but I was very upset when they split them up. But I was thinking today, like...
Everybody was.
Yeah.
Everybody was.
Like, why now, you know? Like, why get them together now? It's been 17 years. And the thing is that I think there's a bunch of reasons. The first is that they need something to balance off the stupidity of Gigi and Stacey. No, I'm serious.
Especially since they seem, you know, hell-bent on keeping Crystal Hunt around.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
As we were talking last week privately, back in the old days, you know, when especially on ABC, when a character just flat didn't work and the audience didn't respond to it, they were jettisoned immediately, and it's just not that way anymore.
No, so I think that might be a reason. I think they didn't have any other story for the summer, but, you know, everybody's always wanted them back together, and the only thing that puzzles me is it's written in a way that, like, if you're, like, Nora's age, you know, and I am. You know, when you get older, you know, you think about things, and still waters run deep. And, you know, sometimes if you do something emotional, you think about it. And they don't show her thinking. You know, the only reason they're getting back together on the show is because the son is crippled, right? It should be more organic than that. And there's nothing, or I hate that word usually, or, you know, when a writer's an editor has to be, but it should come more from those characters. And I just don't see why it's now. I mean, I'm thankful that it's now. But my other fear is that once they get them back together, they'll get rid of them. That's just me being a cynic. And so I just am very, very curious. Like, you know, I'm curious what's going to happen. But I wish it was more of a love story. You know, if Claire Lebine was writing it, it would be a beautiful love story. If anyone, you know, any of the older writers were writing it, it would be a love story. And to me, it's just very shallow. Yeah. You know, you just don't, like, look at somebody and kiss them one day after 17 years.
But, you know, I mean, they've built a convincing friendship over the years. I mean, you know, it's...
I know, but what sparked this?
Well...
You know? That their son is crippled? I mean, that's not enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I think too deeply and expect too much. But, you know, just like everyone else, they're two of my favorite characters and my favorite actors, so you want more. And I wish there was more. We'll see what happens.
You know, I'll tell you, as a fan who has waited 11 years for them to come back together, I'll take whatever I can get.
I will too, definitely. Definitely. And as I said, I'd love to see, you know, how they're going to play this out.
You know, I contend that breaking those two up was the hands-down stupidest decision that Jill Phelps ever made.
I agree with you, and she's made a lot of them.
You were notoriously critical of her and her time on the show, you know, 10 years ago.
She was horrible. She came in and she just destroyed the thing, and she had just done such wonderful work on Guiding Light. Nobody could understand what was going on, you know. And also, you know, the Michael Malone period had been over, the first Michael Malone period, and it's like... to have someone who just comes in and, you know, imposes her personal friends and, you know, I mean, I would say, oh, no, this can't be happening. But it did, you know. Why, you know, we had all these actors. Like, why were they on the show? Because they were on Another World. And you know, and the thing with Nora was the worst because they got rid of her brain. And that, to me, was so offensive. You know, and Linda Gottlieb had brought in a woman with a brain on purpose. And for them to destroy it was just horrible.
Yes.
I mean, who's going to, you know, sleep with my ex-boyfriend so I can get pregnant so I could, you know, pass the baby off on my husband? I mean, an intelligent woman wouldn't do that. So it didn't make any sense for anyone.
So what do you make of all the ABC actors going to As the World Turns this summer? Is this a big deal that the press seems to be making of it, or
I support it. Why not? You know, it's great to see Lynn Herring again.
Absolutely.
And you know, I'm looking forward to Stuart Damon. We have a piece going in about that on our website. And why not? I mean, I'm not going to, you know, being a staunch One Life to Live fan, I tune into As the World Turns very selectively, and I put it on this week to see Lynn. Didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sure.
Uh huh. What
she and Trent are just a dream team together.
Aren't they great? Yeah. Except that she.
It's yin and yang. I mean, it's hilarious.
I know. And doesn't she look like old enough to be his daughter? I mean, time has stopped for Lynn Herring. I mean, she looks 25. I was like shocked. I'm sure that everybody else was too. She is gorgeous.
I think she'll be gorgeous when she's 90. I mean,
I know. It's just amazing though when you see her. It's like, oh my God. And they are. You're right. They are a dream team, and I hope that they keep it going. Definitely, because Henry is such a great character.
Absolutely.
And Vienna, and, you know, they just get, you know, and she could play comedy. It's really whoever came up with that idea should get an Emmy. That's what I think.
But on the other hand, considering all the vets that they ignore as it is this a good move for them in terms of PR with fans?
Well, I know that some, you know, I think I know, you know, who voiced those opinions. Yeah, sure, if it's your show and, you know, and you're used to watching that show, you don't want, you know, you want your vets to get more time, but I think that, you know, they're trying to get newer people in, and that's always annoying. You know, if it's your show, you don't want newer people to come in. But I don't know. I know that they go through their stories very quickly there, so I think that has something to do with it, you know.
Yeah.
Very quickly, like every 3 weeks or something. You know,
so
I think it's kind of a mood. I think they're going to get great ratings for Lynn and for Stuart Damon. They are very popular.
Wouldn't you kill to have a no-holds-barred conversation with Liz Hubbard right about now?
Well, I've had conversations with her in the past. But they usually get kind of scattered. But, yeah, I would definitely. Plus, I'd love to hear about that soap that she's doing in
Denmark?
Holland. Yeah. Yeah. What a great story that would make. I would love to know what that's about. You know, definitely. And she's such a great career. I mean, 50 years, you know. She was on the first soap I ever watched, The Doctors. She was, like, young. I mean, she really has had an amazing soap career. You know, a great interview.
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody just loves how frank she is and candid. I mean, she's just, you know, there just are no holds. I mean, it's...
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think when Felicia was the producer over at As the World Turns, she had a big falling out with them and went off the show for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I don't need you anymore. Bye. You know? And then the production regime changed, and she came back. But, you know, it takes a lot to say bye,
uh-huh.
You know, especially when, you know, those are hard jobs to get. You know.
Well, and the rumor was that she wanted creative control of her character, and she wanted to be able to, you know, pen her own dialogue and, you know, just...
You know, rumors, I don't know. As I said, you know, I think we had talked about this privately. Rumors, I don't know. I don't believe rumors anymore. You know, you hear things, and you just don't know exactly how true they are. I didn't even hear that at the time. I didn't know that was what the fight was over. But I knew Felicia pretty well, and she was like a real reasonable person. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? You know, sometimes the full story is never told.
So you mentioned in a chat with me last week that show has some secret strengths, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that.
The actors, you know, I think the acting. I have a friend who I've been friends with, my soap friend who works at Channel 13 here in New York, and he's like a theater guy, and you know he loves As the World Turns. He loves it no matter what happens. But the thing is when he reasons out why he loves it, he's so good at reasoning. I agree with him. But the acting is really great on that show. I really think that there's still like a standard of excellence on that show in terms of the acting, which might have come down from the older people. And, you know, I think that if you have those kind of actors, then go for it. And I do think the actors are better on that show. They just come from a different tradition. So, you know, look at Henry. God, you don't have him on any ABC soap. Trent Dawson, you know, they're just so good. Katie McLean and, you know, you just don't have those on other shows. I mean, Katie, of course, was on another show. But I just think that they still care there very much about what they're doing.
Have you been watching Martha Byrne on General Hospital?
Yeah. You know what? I was going to write a column about this. She's doing Liz Hubbard. Did you realize that? You know?
No, I didn't. Not until you said that. No.
Well, first of all, she's a great actress, and I'm glad she's really done well, and I hope they keep her in A Nice Girl. I interviewed her when she was 16, but you know, she grew up on the show. She came on As the World Turns when she was 15, and Elizabeth Hubbard was her mother.
Absolutely.
And she's played 30 years worth of, you know, 20 years worth of scenes with Elizabeth Hubbard, and I'm looking at her character, and I'm going, oh, this seems familiar. You know, so it's great. She could do it. You know, I think she's a great gal, but I just like saw the similarity. What do you think?
I think she's one of the few watchable characters on that show right now. And
I can't. I mean, you and me both, yeah.
It reinforces how criminally stupid As the World Turns was to let her slip away.
I know. That was one of the dumbest moves ever in the history of soap operas. You know, she's very dynamic, and everybody loves her. Name me one person who does not love her.
Absolutely. I mean, how can you not? I mean, she's so, I don't think bubbly is quite the right word, but she's so personable. I mean,
yeah,
she's
real.
So,
she's real, and her characters are real. She's a real person. I just, as I said, some of these stories are hard to understand, you know, but, you know, I was shocked when she popped up on General Hospital, weren't you?
Absolutely. I was stunned when, you know, because it had just been announced that she was joining the writing team of Bold and the Beautiful, and then all of a sudden she was, and so you're thinking, well, she's going to the behind the scenes kind of thing, and then all of a sudden she's back, and she looks better than ever. I mean, talk about someone who still looks 25.
She's only like 38 years old. She's not very old at all.
But she looks incredible.
Yeah, she does. She really does.
You know, they were making her so kind of dowdy and matronly on World Turns the past couple of years of her tenure, and all of a sudden she looks, you know, amazing again. I mean, she's...
Maybe that's why they've brought all the General Hospital actors on As the World Turns. Is this reciprocity? They stole Martha, and we're going to steal theirs? I don't know if that's true. That thought just popped into my head. You know, but, you know, in terms of General Hospital, I agree with you completely. It's just beyond the pale, beyond the reach of sanity.
It is great to see Nancy LeGrand back on the front burner, however.
Yeah, that's great. I like that they gave her the daughters. It really strengthens her. And, the young actors that, as I've written, the actors they've hired are fantastic. If they only hired them a head writer, who was as good as they were. And I think they've just done a superb job in casting all those young people on the show.
This new kid who is Michael, he is very good.
Yeah, I think he's like the find of the year, definitely. I have to say that one of the reasons I like him is because he went to a high school in L.A., like a performing arts high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I teach at a school at Marymount Manhattan, which is a lot of dancers and actors. And we have all these kind of young actors coming up. And they're just so full of excitement and talent and working on their craft. And
mm-hmm.
he just reminds me of them. There's something very, very exciting about him as an actor. And, I salute them. I really think that he will go far for them if I wish they should write him some great stuff. That's all I care about. But I think he's just a gem.
And working with Sarah Brown and Maurice Bernard, and these are the best people in the business to learn from and soak in information from. And
oh, definitely, definitely. But the stories. Oh God, I saw Sonny was making some kind of a speech about the baby. I have to have the baby. I mean, come on. put him in the old mobster's home. I'm sorry. It's just so tired. It's so tired.
So during your Soap Opera Weekly days, you were a notorious trend spotter.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone can deny that the hot trend of the year is this influx of gay storylines.
Yes, uh-huh. And it's a good trend. It's an excellent trend, too.
Propped up across the genre. Forward-thinking execs have tried for years to get stories like this going. I mean,
I could tell you, because I was there, I was there 30 years ago, when I first started in the business, people were talking about this.
Absolutely.
And people have been, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
And people have made all these attempts, Doug in the 80s brought on a character, Brian, and he had to, write him off, they were never able to really
mm-hmm.
achieve this, so this should be, celebrated, because it's been so long in coming, and it really is a big, big deal, and I think we owe, I think it owes to Eden Regal and Agnes for Bianca, because they came in very early, they came in and made a full character, and, it really is a great trend.
If you look at the annals of daytime history, you've got Hank Elliott and you've got Michael.
Right, Hank Elliott, that's the one,
You've got Billy Douglas. I mean,
right.
We're kind of riddled with the carcasses of past characters who came and went.
I know. But the things I couldn't do anymore with them, For example, Billy Douglas, I was the first person to interview Ryan.
Yeah.
And I went to that remote. And
yeah.
The reason, I always had a lot of problems because he was not really a member of a central family. Remember, he was not a Buchanan. He was Joey's friend.
Uh-huh.
ABC didn't want to commit. Okay, they didn't want to go there. So I'm saying there's always a I don't want to go there thing of all these stories, And now that they could finally go wherever they want.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Is it just because they're fearless now and they're trying to court any audience they can get, or is there something deeper going on here?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors. First of all, the Luke and Noah story was well done. Okay, even though they didn't kiss for 6 months, I think that they've done a quality job of doing a serious relationship. It's not everything we hoped it to be, but it's
mm-hmm.
So I think that they pretty much set the trend for regular characters and also Bianca. So I think that's one of it. The second is that hello, this is the world, this is reality. And it's true, there have been gay, the soap opera industry has been very gay for the last since it began in terms of actors, writers, directors.
Uh-huh.
And, this, as I said, it's really long overdue. And why not? There are millions and millions of gay fans. Why
sure.
shouldn't they have something, they have, be represented too?
Sure, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
So going forward, what do you think of Kyle and Fish on One Life? What do you think of Otalia?
Well, Kyle and Fish, I like, because there's a couple of, you know, I think that they were so hyped before the storyline even began, and I always resent that when people, somebody says to me, this is going to be the greatest story in the world before you see it. But I've been seeing the scenes, and I think they're beautifully done, you know, very, very well written. So I think it's going to be good. But I want to be the one who's going to say it's a good story. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to say, oh, it's a great story before, it, you know, it hasn't even been on the screen yet. And Otalia has a huge following. My God, I mean, you know, what a response they've gotten with that. It's just too bad that it was in the waning days of Guiding Light. You know?
And, you know, the funny thing is it's based on very little content on screen. I mean, you know, it's funny, this huge response they've gotten based on more of a concept than the reality of the story.
Well, it's because, you know, people, you know, as the writers used to say in the old days, people have hope, you know, daytime is about hope. So if you show one thing, you're hoping for more, you know. And with Italia, I think that's what the story is. They've taken a real long time with that. But people, I think it was, you know, for something a show that's going off the air like Guiding Light to get so much great publicity and a reaction, it's amazing, you know, amazing that, you know, nobody did this before. And it turns people, you know, my husband works in an office, and his office mate is not a soap opera fan, but she was like looking at my column, and she was reading about Otalia, and she goes, oh my God, I have to get to know them. And she started watching the show, and, you know, and she, you know, she wants to know where they live. And, you know, it's a really large audience out there that is underserved. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's too bad. It's really too bad. It couldn't happen maybe 5 years ago.
Absolutely. You know, on the subject of Guiding Light, the influx of returning vets has been very nice. And you know, a lot of fun to kind of watch all these people that we've loved over the past 2 decades and more come back. But given the way that show has been so desecrated over the past few years, is there any way at all that it can have a satisfying finale, truly?
Well, you know, the fact that it's been on the air for 75 years, I think they're going to have to come up with something fantastic. You know, I don't know who's going to write it, but I'm sure there won't be a dry eye in the house. I mean, there's not a dry eye in the house, you know, like a soap quote like Texas. Any soap that ends is horrible. But I don't know. You know, I've not been a fan of the show the last couple of years, and, you know, I just don't know how they're going to do it. But it is good to see the old faces. I saw Peter Simon today. I was really shocked. And, you know, it's like you get that, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, but I also wrote in my column that to me, you know, like they're bringing back family members. But, you know, there are certain characters, you know, actors on that show I love, like Monty Sharp and, you know, do you remember him?
Yes, I do.
He played David. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
And Kevin Mambo, who was one of my all-time favorite actors. And bring them back, too. You know, it doesn't only have to be the family members.
Sure.
Bring back everyone, you know. And those two happen to be two of my all-time favorite actors. So I've been campaigning. I know it's a little late, but, you know, I'd love to see them.
But how great to see people like Maeve Kincaid back and
Peter
Simon, like you mentioned, who still looks amazing.
Yeah, it's you know, when they bring back Lisa Brown, it's, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's so bittersweet. You know, you really love seeing these people, but, you know, why are they there? You know, why, you know, it's just very, very bittersweet. And I think as the conclusion comes closer, there's going to be a lot of press. You know, there's going to be a 60 Minutes thing, and I know some other magazine things. And, you know, that's going to be a real big story, and everybody's going to say, oh, Guiding Light is dead, soaps are dead. And, you know, I feel sorry for Guiding Light, but soaps are not dead. You know, I feel terrible about that, you know. All my best friends, that's their favorite shows. I used to belong in the 90s on the internet to a Guiding Light group. And, you know, we would all email every day, and we went to shows together. And, you know, I mean, we're still friendly with these people. Guiding Light was a great, warm, wonderful thing.
Even during the Paul Roush days, I mean, it was still, even though it changed dramatically, it was still eminently watchable.
I think anything Paul does is watchable because he knows how to produce.
Mm-hmm.
But I hated those days. I thought that, you know, they were just filled with bad politics and bad writers. I think they had Brown and Essenston and The Clone. And there's a lot of bad politics going on in those days at the studio, because I remember that, because I was kind of like not really I was not appreciative of it, and the people I worked for, the magazine, loved it. So I was, you know, there was just all kinds of conflicts going on. But it wasn't just me. It was a really, you know, a crazy time there. The politics just got out of hand.
Yeah. So speaking of Paul, his show Y&R is pretty much the toast of the town these days.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. Yes. Well, it's watchable. You know, I watch it. I watch it. Sure, you know, I mean, it's very watchable. It's the only one that has a viable, you know, production team and writer. You know, nobody gives Hogan any credit. You know, I give Paul a lot of the credit because I know what he does to shows, and I could see it. But, you know, it's like the last full-blooded soap opera. You know, they've got the money, they've got the cast, and they don't have to cut the corners that everybody else does. So, and, you know, I think they're just being, they're actually producing theater there, which I think that most of the other soaps are not.
So is it living up to the hype?
I think, well, you know, again, who is doing the hype? You have to think about that. Who's telling you it's the greatest show in the world? You know, consider the source, okay? But, you know, you have to, you know, take into evaluation. If I wrote it, I would say, of course. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, think about the hype. You know, who is saying these things? But, you know, I think that it's living up to the fact that it's the only show that everybody I know is watching, okay? So that's good. And there is, you know, I think that, you know, Paul has done a superb job. I think we talked about that the last time I was on, about it, that he's really producing the hell out of it, and it looks like, you know, something is happening there and her brain is going.
Absolutely.
And they're just doing a lot of, you know, clever things, like that stuffed cat. Everybody knows the cat, right? It's just like everybody knew Timmy. Actually, that cat showed up on my friends list on Facebook. It did. It says, Kitty Benson wants you to be her friend. I said, okay.
How funny.
Yeah. So I'm saying, I mean, that was very smart. And, you know, they are doing a lot of very smart things. They're picking up on the whole, you know, the fact that they're doing, you know, gay characters. And there's just a lot of smart decisions, you know, bringing back Tom Beards. That was a great, you know, I don't like him as an actor, but it was a wonderful decision because, you know, he was the first actor to ever come out of the closet in daytime. And bringing him back is very meaningful.
Sure.
You know, so I just think there's a lot of brain work going on in that show, and I appreciate that because I don't see that in a lot of other places.
Have they botched that story though, or is it still kind
Which
of
one?
Reviewable? The story of Philip's fake death and his comeback.
I think it's not played out yet. I would give it time, you know, because I mean, even though he's not the greatest actor, I think, you know, it brings in Trisha Cass and she's great, and it brings in, you know, Jill, and it brings in Catherine, and, you know, and it brought in John Driscoll to play Chance the son. So, you know, I think we should give it a chance. I think that, you know, it was a real smart move to do that. And, like, I don't know. I mean, do you ever know anybody who went away for 20 years because they couldn't deal with their own identity?
No.
No, me neither. But it's soapy. It's soapy. You know what I'm saying? It's soapy.
The thing is, those of us who were watching that show 20 years ago know that none of this current stuff jibes with what we saw.
Oh, that always happens. I know. Because Phillip was quite... tell me that 20 years ago. What did you see that you don't see now?
Well, I mean, it was the story of you know, it was back in the days when everybody loved cricket. I mean, I mean, everything revolved around cricket back in those days, you know, and he was very much in love with her from what I remember. I mean, it was, you know, the triangle between him and Nina and cricket, and, you know, his drinking problem hadn't
revealed itself?
Yeah, it had. I mean, we watched him have a drinking problem, but it was more because of, if I remember correctly, because of the family pressures, the fact that he had gotten this girl pregnant, and he was in love with the other girl. You know, it doesn't really jibe with what we saw back then. And maybe I'm completely romanticizing what I saw back then. I mean, that happens all the time.
Well, you know, in the old days, they cared about continuity. You know, I'm talking about, like, Bo and Nora. They figured, well, let's get Bo and Nora together today, despite what's happened in the past, just so we can get new viewers. And I think that's what they've done with this story.
Yeah.
If you see it being so out of sync. I didn't see it at the time, but... you know, I think that they're just going for, you know, to go for publicity at this point. To go for a trend is probably more important than what the viewers. I'm not endorsing it. I feel the same way you do, but I'm just saying I think this is the way the thinking is now. You know, if we could, you know, we're trying to survive. You know, what the hell, you know, I do. You know, that's every soap fan hates when they change the past.
Exactly.
They do. You know, but. I think that they'll, you know, again, that's one of the mistakes daytime has made from the last 20 years. They're more interested in getting new people than in honoring the own. the old.
So to whom do we have to pray to get rid of Adrian France?
I can't. I'm not answering that. Ask a gossip columnist that. I don't know. I'm not as linked into the gossip, the California gossip, as I used to be. But I just, I agree. I wrote about against her in my column, didn't I? Years ago, I can't even remember. Was she on? Yeah, she was on Bald and Beautiful, and
yeah.
I was still writing it Soap
Opera
Weekly. I just cannot. I feel the same way you do. I feel
the same way. It almost makes you wonder if she. If she has something on someone in the executive suite. I mean, it's...
I think she... Well, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of that going around, you know. Again, ask a gossip columnist. But I think there's a lot of that goes around these days.
What's your take on Stacey Heidick? Is that character redeemable?
I don't know. She's made quite a splash, don't you think?
She's a dynamite actress.
Yeah. And she's like a camp queen. And, you know, every soap needs a camp queen. Plus, but she's good. She's a camp queen and a good actress. You don't get
Absolutely.
That a lot. And I don't know what they're going to do. I think that, isn't she going to, I just read what she's doing next week where she seduces Jack with a roofie or something. And she, you know, Jack thinks he's sleeping with somebody else. So, you know, I think that if he gets some ratings, he'll keep her. You know, and I think that she is getting them ratings. And she's a fun character. The thing is, they're
she's
always.
She's a blast. And she's a blast to watch.
Yeah, but, you know, that's. Well, Young and Restless has always done well with its villainesses, you know,
sure.
from the beginning. Jill and Catherine and, you know, there have been so many great villainesses on that show. They make that show go. So
back in the day, nobody thought that Michelle Stafford could be redeemed for all the ridiculous
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, they've really built their house there on villainesses.
But this character has crossed, you know, a pretty substantial line in terms of harming a child, and I'm just wondering if...
Yeah, you know, I wrote about that. That really
much.
Disturbed me. That disturbed me, yeah. Since when do they do that to moms on daytime, you know? Because, no, it's true. I mean, there are things they wouldn't do because they know you... They used to think mothers watched daytime, and they were the... You know, they do, but I think the reason they did that is they're going to, like, Michelle Stafford is just going to rise and just destroy the town because she's so angry. Wouldn't
uh-huh.
you be? No, I think this is what's going to bring back Michelle Stafford as a big villainess. I mean,
yeah.
what could be a better motivation than that? But it's so cruel. Oh, it's so cruel. It's just too cruel. You know, I have friends who have babies, and, you know, they don't want to watch things that, you know, about children because it's hard for them.
Oh, and watching that poor child just struggle with her speech is just heartbreaking. I mean, it just...
I know. It
literally tears at you.
Yeah, it's really perverse in a way. You know, and I don't even think they're doing it as a social issue story, you know, like she has some, you know what I'm saying, they'll come out and have an 800 number or something. I just don't think they're doing it for that reason. It's a new low to which daytime has stooped. And also the same thing with Lily and the cancer, the ovarian cancer.
Yes.
Because that, I mean, please, she's 22 years old. You know, I mean, and also the only reason they're doing it is because they want to give the actress some depth. You know, they need a heroine on the show, and they couldn't get it, and it's just so, I feel so manipulated, you know. I feel totally manipulated.
I'll tell you what's funny. Someone on your site last week, when you put that in one of your questions, someone on your site last week said that the funny thing about that story was how it was mainly about the reactions of the men in her life.
Right, right, right,
story.
Right. Yeah, somebody wrote that. That was a great observation.
And, you know, it never even dawned on me until someone said that, but it really is true.
It's true. Well,
the story is not so much about her. It's about Neil and Devon and Kane and
exactly.
You know, all the guys in her life.
When it was revealed, you know, this horrible, you know, the doctor, Neil told her what was wrong. I mean, Christoph St. John had the scene, Crystal Khalil, and I thought that was very odd too, very, very odd. You know, but it's too cruel, as I wrote on my site. It's too cruel for the summer. I don't want ovarian cancer for the summer. Wait for November sweeps. You know. No, it's true. You don't want to think about that. You know, you want to go to the beach. You know, I'm not a bubblehead, but I just think that it's just too much, much for the middle of the summer. And curiously, and I don't know if you know this, but ovarian cancer was the very first social issue show. Thing done on daytime. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Agnes did it at Guiding Light, I don't know, way before I was around. She gave Bert Bauer, who was a middle-aged woman, ovarian cancer, and that was the very, very first social issue story. But the thing is, Bert Bauer lived. You know? No, I'm serious. She lived. And because I remember at the time Agnes said she would only do stories about stories that have hope. Mm-hmm. Okay. But this story, they gave her 45%. I mean, didn't you, I like broke down when he, you know, they told her she had 45% chance of living. Mm-hmm. I don't need that. I really don't need that.
Not in sunny July, anyway.
I know, but just, you know, I mean, I've been, you know, you go through things in your own life, and it's like, I don't know, there was just something about it that just seemed very fake, you know, and desperate.
Talk to me about Clementine Ford. You know, almost nobody in the soap press likes what she's doing with Mac, and I think she's dynamite.
I think she's good. I know, that's right, that's right. Yeah, I like her, too. You know, when I was speaking with you privately, you really made me think about that, you know, and I like her.
She's far from the standard soap ingenue, and that's exactly what I like about her. She's very refreshing, and I think that she...
I agree with you. And you were
she
real...
and Billy Miller share a sweet, very organic chemistry together, I think.
I agree. And she's just different. You know, in the old days, on, like, Another World, you'd always get different types, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, different types of women and you know, different types of men. And we know you always get the same type these days. And she's kind of offbeat. I like that a lot. I agree with you. You know, I think it's a really good observation. I don't know. I guess people don't like her because she's kind of quiet or offbeat. Great. You know, I think that's fantastic. And, you know, I really do. It's just that, you know, they don't cast people like that very much anymore.
Well, and you know, she came in with such a splash too, because she's Sybil Shepherd's daughter, and you know, it felt at the time like they were reaching for a name in that way. And so I'm just wondering if people resented her before they even saw her on screen, and aren't giving her credit for that reason.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not out there, but I know from the past that Paul has a fantastic eye for talent that goes back to Another World. He brought up Ray Liotta and so many actors, and you know,
Robin Strasser.
Well, Robin Strasser was around before him, and you know, so many of the people on One Life to Live, Jessica Tuck, and you know, he really, really has an eye for talent. I used to always see him at the theater, you know, like checking out actors and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you know, since he came on, I think the casting has been a lot better. You know, I think the big problem with that show is, and this is my opinion only, I think the younger cast is not very strong, and you know, you have to get the viewers with the younger cast. And you know, I think that the men are very handsome, and I think they've gotten a lot better, and I think Crystal Khalil has gotten a lot better. But I think that they really need to buoy up that young cast, and I think that's the one thing that would make, you know, push that show back to its former greatness.
Yeah.
You know, they just need better. But you know, as I said, the guys are, you know, I think they've come along beautifully. You know, but the girls, you know, Crystal Khalil has come along too, but not. You need somebody who is like a heroine, you know. You need like a Rachel and Alice. You need an Alice, you know. No, I'm serious. You need somebody who's compelling.
Yeah.
They need compelling, and there's no compelling on that show. That's why they said, okay, we're going to give her ovarian cancer to get people's sympathy. But that's different than making you love a character. Right?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, completely.
I've been thinking about this, and I just, you know, it's fun because I've watch Paul over the years, and I know what he does, and I think he's really worked with a lot of those young actors, and it's worked. But I think that, you know, I think that is in a nutshell the only thing that's really wrong with that show at this point. I don't feel drawn in.
You know, the ingenues that he has, like Emily O'Brien and
oh, they're great. They don't use them, yeah.
The girl who plays Colleen, I can't remember her name, but
uh-huh.
But the young people that he does have to work with, especially on the female side, they're great actresses, but they're just kind of, I don't know, dull characters. I mean, they're not characters you want to spend an hour with.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
you're not drawn in. That's what I'm saying. I think that's the big weakness. You know, I don't know. I guess you could solve that with casting, but you have to solve it with writing also.
Yeah. But on the male side, I think Billy Miller is fabulous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love it.
And it's so funny because I loathed him on All My Children. And
yeah,
I don't mean I loathed the character.
Yeah,
I mean I loathed him.
Yeah, I've gotten to like him a lot on the show. It's taken a while, you know, but I could tell that somebody's working with him. You know what I'm saying? It's like
mm-hmm.
somebody's kicking their butts there, and it works. You know, he's developed, you know, he and the guy who plays Kane have developed really well, I
mm-hmm.
think. You know, so they just, I don't know what they need there. I think, as I said, they just need... As I said, something that is heartfelt and compelling as opposed to plot-driven.
So talk about the myths of daytime. You know, we had a discussion about this last week about, you know, how kind of soap fans hear something and take it as gospel and you know, when you look deeper, it's really not so true.
Well, I think it's, you know, people like me and maybe you, we read the boards all the time. You know, we're really hungry for the latest bit of information. And I think that, you know, we want it so we could use it in our arguments and, you know, thinking about it. And but a lot of the stuff that I see reported, you know, a lot of the, they're always like, there's always like a line on everyone, you know, like somebody is the worst, you know, Jill is the worst monster in the world and Paul is the worst monster in the world. And I don't know, I guess I have a little insight into this because, like, I've interviewed them over the years and, yeah, sometimes they are, but they're not, you know, they're not 100% something. You know, people assume that they know everything about everyone. You know, like with Jim, you know, who I knew personally, people write the nastiest things about him. And they're not true, you know. Mm-hmm. I could tell you that they're really not true, you know. And I just, I don't know, you just, there's just so many, people just assume things, you know. And a lot of the stuff that's reported, you know, online is not fact. It's gossip. You know, we live in a gossip world. And I think that a lot of people just take that gossip to heart, and they don't think about, well, is this true or not?
Exactly.
You know, or someone's opinion. You know, like I think that the famous thing is that, you know, that Maria Bell is the greatest, you know, single producer in the world. Who is she? You know, and what about, you know, you've got Paul there. You've got Hogan there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what about them? So I'm saying, you know, if somebody carries on about how wonderful she is, you know, everybody says, oh, Maria Bell, she's the cause of it. You know what I'm saying? Well, you know, use your head and think. You know, it's not always what it seems. And especially today on the net, because it's not exactly journalism. It's kind of like, you know, report. I don't know. It's just, I just take everything I see now and think, oh, let's consider the source. Also, because I'm a journalism professor, and, you know, this is what we teach kids. No, I'm serious. You know, in the journalism world, you have to have two pieces of proof for any argument. And I don't see a lot of proof.
Sure.
You know, it's gossip. I wouldn't want people to gossip that way about me.
Absolutely not.
You know, oh, she's a monster, she's a this. You know what I'm saying? I think that so fans should be very, you know, think about what they read. That's why we call it, you know, Souls for the Thinking Fan. Because I think about what I read. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I read, and I said, oh, that can't be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And even if you think of popular opinions these days, like, you know, the general popular opinion is that Santa Barbara was always, you know, a fantastic soap.
That's not, yeah, uh-huh.
You
That's
and I watched
exactly.
that show from beginning to end, and it wasn't always a fantastic
soap. No, certainly not, certainly not. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I mean by myth. Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the popular opinion is that Paul Rausch's time at One Life to Live was just full of, you know, ridiculous, over-the-top stuff, and it wasn't always.
No, you know, I mean, I loved, you know, I loved Heaven, you know, that's a
sure.
famous story. And as I said, there seems to be a party line on everything. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I was around for, so I know. But, you know, Santa Barbara was not great. It was horrible at the end. You know?
And at the beginning, too. I mean, you know, in the very beginning, it was ridiculous.
Oh, sure. Sure. I interviewed the Dobsons, let me tell you. I know why it was so ridiculous, you know. But I liked it in the beginning, but as I said, people just, as I said, it's just, you know, myths, basically. You know, people say that, you know, Pete LeMay's The Another World is the greatest soap ever. I watched it. I was bored. I'm sorry, you know? and you know, so I just, it you know, and then people use it in their arguments against each other, and I think that's very odd. Very odd, you know. It depends. It depends on where you get your stuff from, you know.
Well, and you know, the party line, as you say, is that, you know, Ryan's Hope was always just sterling drama. And, you know, day-to-day on that show, it was quite boring.
Well, I just, they had a lot of different eras. They had an era, I was thinking, because, you know, Paul Mayer, who just died, he was Claire's partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I interviewed them, and I was remembering about Paul Mayer, because when I went to interview the two of them at Claire's house, Paul, like, you know, and Claire, like, defend everything they wrote and that the network didn't like, and Paul would just look up into the air and go, this is bullshit, you know? Excuse me. But what I'm saying is that, no, it, you know, you can't, you know, they did have a lot of problems on that show. They owned it, the network owned it, the time slot. They had, you know, it was always kind of tempestuous.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people say, oh, it was, you know, it was wonderful. You know, the only thing I could think is wonderful, you know, people say Gloria Monty's General Hospital is wonderful, and parts of it really were, but it wasn't all wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, so people, you know, everybody thinks that they know. They know, they know. You know, you only know what you could think, basically. You know, and as I say, I just happened to be around, you know, in those days and know some of the participants and be on the magazines. And it's fun. That's, you know, it's very hard for me to read this stuff online because
sure.
I know it's not true.
Sure. So what's on tap for MarlenaDeLaCroix.com? I assume you're coming back to regular posting.
Oh, yeah,
into the summer?
Yeah, with the Emmys, definitely. Definitely I'm going to do the Emmys. And then I'll just go back into regular production, you know, every week. And, you know, it's hard, though, in terms of it's so hard to write criticism now because there's so much bad stuff, you know. And you don't want to write bad stuff every week.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to say, oh, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. You know, when I was at Soap Opera Weekly, I would write about the fun stuff, you know. I would try to have a different topic every week and say,
uh-huh.
you know, look at everybody's plastic surgery, ha, ha, ha. Or, you know, look at all the, you know, the mother-in-laws married to their son-in-laws. But now, you know, there's no fun, you know, as one of my writers, Matthew, says, it's very hard to bring out the funny now. You know, so that's the hard part, is trying to get out the funny, because there's not a lot of funny. And I don't like bashing people. I really don't get any pleasure out of seeing something I've been so involved with for most of my life, you know, get trashed. You know, it's not, you know, joyous as it once was.
Which is probably why something like The Stuffed Cat comes on and becomes a huge sensation. Because
Right. Everybody wants something to laugh at. But I'm saying there's very few things that you can laugh at.
Exactly.
You know, and that was always one of the reasons I loved being Marlena, because there were just so many things in the soap world to write about and laugh at. And, you know, I don't want to keep, you know, I'm not in the business to, you know, destroy people. I used to, you know, I love soaps, and I would rather celebrate, you know, my love for them than their downfall.
Well, I tell you what, I've had such a great time talking to you this morning, and I appreciate you, as I said, coming in from your vacation for an hour or so just to come gab. And
well, I appreciate it, too, especially since I'm off to get a tooth pulled, literally, as we speak. So I am, literally. My appointment's at 2 o'clock, and I just wanted to thank you for having me on again. I, you know, as I
Absolutely.
Said, I've just been sitting
Listen.
Here all summer bursting with opinions, and it's true, and this is, you know, a really great place to burst, so to speak. I hope I gave you something to think about.
You absolutely did, and I want you to know that you are welcome here anytime to discuss anything.
Uh-huh, great. Okay, well, thanks again, and we'll speak soon, okay?
Okay. Before I let you go, could I get you to do a promo for my show? I neglected to do this the first time you're on.
Oh, God, I'm so honored.
I would love for
so
you to...
So honored.
So you can say anything you like as long as it includes your name and Brandon's Buzz.
Okay.
And I'm recording now, so anytime you're ready, shoot.
Hi, this is Connie Pasolacqua-Hayman, otherwise known as Marlena Delacroix. Welcome to Brandon's show. He's a fantastic interviewer, and I'm saying that because I'm a journalism professor and he's a pro. Have a great time with Brandon. I always do. Thanks. Bye.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. I'll see you soon.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
The fantastic Connie Pasolacqua-Hayman, everybody. Marlena Delacroix herself, right here on Brandon's Buzz. Brandon's Buzz in the can for July 31st, 2009. As I said, I'm going on a road trip to Colorado next week, so I won't be on the air next week. And I'm going to visit my mother the week after that, so I won't be on the air the week after that. But I will be back on the air in the back half of August with great new shows and great new guests. And hopefully Marlena will be joining me again in the very near future. I appreciate you guys listening, and I want to tell you that you can find me in a number of ways on the Internet. First of all, this show's website, www.blogtalkradio.com/Brandon's Buzz. From there, you can listen to the show, you can listen to old shows, you can download old shows, you can drop me an email, you can leave comments, you can tell me what you like, tell me what you don't like, tell me what you'd like to see on the show. That's the show's main website, blogtalkradio.com/Brandon's Buzz. You can also find me at my blog, brandonsbuzz.com. From there, you can access a full radio archive of past shows. Click on the radio button at the top of the page, and it'll take you to a page where you can access all my previous interviews. This is my 29th show, so all 29 will be up on the radio archive later today. And from there, you can click on each show and listen to them and also see the great banners that my pal Joanne makes to help me advertise the show. That's at my blog, brandonsbuzz.com. You can also find the show at iTunes. I'm on iTunes, guys. Just click. Just type Brandon's Buzz in the iTunes Music Store search box, scroll down to the podcast section, click on my logo. From there, you can download old individual shows as podcasts, or you can subscribe to the show and have each episode automatically upload or automatically download to your iTunes Music library, your personal library, the minute they're uploaded to the site. So by all means, check that out. So I'm all over the Internet. There is no excuse not to be able to find me. Just Google the words Brandon's Buzz, and something about me will pop up and point you in my direction, surely. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate Marlena for stopping by one more time. I appreciate you guys coming by, and I hope you continue coming by and listening to Brandon's Buzz.
Hi, this is Brenda Russell, and there is definitely a buzz happening, Brandon's Buzz.
I just had the most fun in the world doing Brandon's Buzz. This is Louise Schaefer. It's a fabulous podcast, and it's a great, great way to spend some time. Brandon is the best.
Hey, hey, this is Nia Peoples, and you are checking out Brandon's Buzz right now.
Hey, everybody, this is Beth Maitland. You probably know me best from my role as Tracy Abbott on The Young and the Restless, and I'm talking to you about Brandon's Buzz. Come on, you got to find him.
Hi, this is Gordon Thompson speaking, and I want to tell you that I have appeared on Brandon's Buzz, and I had a great time, and I think you will too, so please log on and have a look.
Merci à vous tous. Écoutez Brandon Buzz sur Blog Talk Radio. Bonsoir et à très bientôt.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.